Picture a wing 84 feet across, thinner than the wing of your Cessna, slicing through air so thin you could almost call it vacuum. There is no engine, there is no propeller, there is no jet. Just a sailplane, two pilots in pressure suits, and a rising river of air that most of aviation never even knew was there. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. We spend a lot of time on this show talking about how we push airplanes higher and faster with more power. Today, I want to flip that completely around. Today's story is about going to the edge of space with no power at all. Let's break this down. The airplane is called Purland II. It is a glider, a pure engineless sailplane, the same basic species you see being winched or towed off the grass at soaring clubs all over the country. And in September of 2018, over the mountains of Patagonia in southern Argentina, that glider climbed to 76,124 feet. Let that number sit for a second, 76,000 feet. That is higher than the U-2 spy plane flies in level flight. It is higher than almost anything with wings has ever sustained flight without burning fuel. Airliners cruise around 35,000-40,000. This glider doubled that and kept climbing, riding nothing but moving air. Before we go deeper, let me tell you who keeps this show in the air. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. If you know a pilot who just crossed one of those thresholds, that's the gift that actually means something. AviationSoul.com, now. How does an airplane with no engine get to the edge of space? Here's what most people miss about soaring. A glider is never really flying up. A glider is always descending through the air around it. It sinks, slowly, like a marble rolling down a very gentle slope. The trick every glider pilot learns is to find air that is going up faster than the glider is sinking down. When you find that, the air carries you up, even though, relative to the air itself, you're still gliding down. It's a beautiful piece of physics. You get altitude for free, subtracted from the atmosphere's own motion. Most glider pilots use two kinds of rising air: thermals, which are bubbles of warm air lifting off sun-heated ground on a summer afternoon, and ridge lift, which is wind hitting the face of a hill or mountain and being deflected upward. Both of those top out low, a few thousand feet. Maybe you catch a strong thermal to 18,000 on an exceptional day in the mountains. The Purland Project uses a third kind of lift, and this is the whole key to the story. Mountain waves. Here's the analogy. Think about water flowing over a big rock in a fast river. On the downstream side, you get a standing wave, a hump of water that stays in one place while the river pours through it. Air does exactly the same thing. When strong wind blows over a mountain range, it sets up a wave in the atmosphere downstream, a standing ripple that can stretch tens of thousands of feet up into the sky. Glider pilots have ridden mountain wave for decades. It's how sailplanes routinely get into the flight levels. But normal mountain wave dies out in the stratosphere. It hits a ceiling and flattens. So for years, the assumption was that wave lift simply couldn't take you into the deep stratosphere. 70, 80, 90,000 feet was off the table for a glider. The insight behind Purland, and I love this, came from an aeronautical engineer and test pilot named Einar Weldzoldsen. He'd flown at NASA. And he saw a photograph, taken by a researcher, showing stratospheric clouds over the Arctic that could only have been formed by air moving in waves way up high, far above where wave lift was supposed to exist. The data was telling an interesting story, and it said the textbook was wrong. What Enevoldsen figured out, working with the meteorologists, is that in a few very special places on Earth, near the poles, in late winter and early spring, the ordinary mountain wave gets a partner. There's a river of wind circling the pole called the polar vortex. When the mountain wave connects with that polar vortex, the wave doesn't die in the stratosphere. It gets reinforced. It couples with the vortex and keeps climbing, tens of thousands of feet higher than anyone thought possible. Patagonia, down at the bottom of Argentina, is one of the only places on the planet where the tall Andes and the polar vortex line up just right. That's why the team hauls a glider to a town called El Calafate. It is one of the few doorways on Earth into that stratospheric elevator, so that's the air. Now let's talk about the machine, because riding that elevator is a serious engineering problem. At 76,000 feet, you are above 95% of the atmosphere. The air pressure is a tiny fraction of what it is at sea level. A human being exposed to that has minutes, maybe seconds, of useful consciousness. Your blood would literally begin to boil at body temperature. This is spaceflight territory in every way that matters to the human body. Perlin 2 is a pressurized sailplane, and here's a detail that tells you how clever the engineering had to be. On a jet, you pressurize the cabin by bleeding compressed air off the engines. This glider has no engine. There is nothing to bleed air from, and there's barely any outside air to compress anyway. So the team built a sealed cabin that carries its own recycled atmosphere, a closed system, more like a spacecraft or a submarine than an airplane. The two pilots breathe from a rebreather setup that scrubs out carbon dioxide, the same principle divers use. They wear pressure suits as a backup in case the cabin ever fails. Then there's the wing. In air that thin, a normal wing generates almost no lift. To fly up there, you need an enormous, extremely efficient wing, and you have to fly fast. Here's the strange part. At 76,000 feet, the glider's true airspeed is a couple hundred miles an hour, but the thin air means the wing barely feels it. The indicated airspeed, what the wing actually experiences, is slow, close to a stall. Push a little too fast in true airspeed, and you approach the speed of sound over the wing. Slow down a little, and you stall and fall out of the sky. That gap between too fast and too slow? Pilots call it coffin corner, and up there it's razor thin. The pilots are threading a needle the whole way up. The controls get vague and mushy because there's so little air moving over them. Everything is delicate, and it is brutally cold, well below minus 50. The whole flight can last hours, much of it spent grinding upward at a walking pace in the vertical, circling and working the wave, in a sealed capsule, in pressure suits, on the edge of a stall, on the edge of space. Now let's be honest and balanced, because that's what we do on this show. The original goal was 90,000 feet, and the project has not hit 90,000. 76,000 is the record set in 2018, and it's a genuine world record for the highest sustained level flight by a winged aircraft, beating the U-2, but it fell short of the dream number. The stratospheric wave is fickle. The polar vortex has to behave. The winds have to stack up perfectly, and those conditions come together only a handful of days a year. If that, some seasons, the window barely opens. This is not a machine you can fly on demand. It is expensive. It is weather-dependent, and it depends on a small army of volunteers and sponsors with Airbus as the headline backer. That's a fragile way to run a flight program, and everyone involved knows it. So here's the fair question. Why do it? Is this just a stunt, a record for a plaque on the wall? No. And here's the part that makes me care about it as an engineer. That glider is a research platform, and it may be one of the best ones we have for a specific job. When you want to study the stratosphere, the very layer where the ozone lives, where climate and weather couple together in ways we still don't fully understand, your usual tools all have problems. Weather balloons drift and pop and give you one quick vertical smear of data. Satellites look down from far away through everything below. Rockets flash through in seconds. Powered research aircraft burn fuel and pump out exhaust, and their engines heat and disturb the very air you're trying to measure. The glider has none of those problems. It is silent. It makes no exhaust. It doesn't disturb the air chemically or thermally the way an engine does. It can loiter, climbing slowly through layer after layer, taking clean measurements of air that has never been touched by a combustion engine. For certain kinds of atmospheric science, that is a genuinely valuable instrument, not a stunt. The Perlin team has flown research payloads and shared data with the science community precisely because a quiet, engineless platform in the stratosphere is rare and useful. And there's a farther out payoff, the real space crossover. The atmosphere on Mars is extremely thin, roughly comparable in some respects to Earth's atmosphere up around 100,000 feet. So when engineers think about someday flying a vehicle in the Martian sky, the aerodynamics they need to understand are the aerodynamics of very, very thin air over a wing. That is exactly the regime Perlin flies in every time it goes up. The data on how a wing behaves at the edge of the usable atmosphere feeds directly into how we might design a wing for another planet. An engineless glider over Argentina is quietly doing homework for flight on Mars. So, why am I telling this story during AirVenture Week? Because this is the purest expression of what Oshkosh actually celebrates, and I don't think enough people connect the dots. Walk the grounds at Whitman Field this week. Yes, you'll see the warbirds and the airliners and the big manufacturer tents. But the beating heart of this event, the reason it exists, is the home-built and experimental world. It is people who look at what the textbook says an airplane can do and quietly answer. I don't think that's actually the limit. The Experimental Aircraft Association was founded by exactly those people in a basement, building airplanes the establishment said were impossible or pointless. Walk over to the soaring displays and the sailplanes on the field. Talk to the glider pilots. That community has always been the quietest and in some ways the most sophisticated corner of aviation. They fly the longest cross countries in the world, hundreds and hundreds of miles, with no engine at all, by reading the invisible structure of the atmosphere better than the rest of us ever bothered to. Perlin is that same skill, that same reading of the air, pushed all the way to the stratosphere. And that's the thread that runs through everything in the innovation hangars here. The electric motors, the fuel cells, the experimental avionics, the kit planes with wings no factory would have dared build 20 years ago. Every one of them started as somebody refusing to accept a stated limit. A glider has no engine, so a glider can't go high. Everyone knew that. Wave dies in the stratosphere. Everyone knew that too. Then a test pilot looked at a photograph of the wrong clouds in the wrong place, and 76,000 feet later, everyone was wrong. Here's what I want you to take from this. The next time someone tells you an airplane category has a hard ceiling, that gliders are just for gentle afternoons over the ridge, or that you need more power to go higher, remember two pilots in pressure suits, in a sealed capsule, riding a standing wave of air into the black, with the propeller they didn't need folded up in a hangar back on the ground. The reporting and data on the Perlin mission today come from the Perlin project itself, from Airbus, and from the atmospheric science community that's flown payloads with the team. And I'd point you to their published flight records if you want the full numbers. You can find more of these breakdowns at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. Next time you're getting bumped around under a nice line of mountain wave, remember there's a whole invisible architecture up there, and somebody figured out how to climb it all the way to space. Fly safe.